And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, contemplating that this show should probably be 2 hours long, considering everything that's happened this week.
It's been a very busy
even the past 48 hours. My goodness.
And Gary Shandling died in the last hour.
Yeah. Things are happening I didn't know about.
I know.
Gary Shandling. Wow. Yeah. What a year. So what a week.
What a week.
Oh, my goodness.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we will head back to the Red Chamber. Last Friday, Prime Minister Trudeau named 7 new people for a nomination to the Senate. And then on Monday, we got the final tab for 14 senators who will have to pay back for their ill-advised deductions. So, case closed, right?
Oh, it's all over. It's done. Forget about it.
Then the untimely death... I shouldn't have propped a joke before this one, but the untimely death of Rob Ford. For better or worse, he put Toronto and Canada on the political map in a way no one had ever done before. But we're going to peel back the grief and the praise and take a serious look at the man's legacy and ask, what will Rob Ford really be remembered for? And then finally, we will be... Speaking of legacies again, Barack Obama, President of the United States, went to Cuba for a 3-day trip to see if we could, like, once and for all end the Cold War. And we're going to squeeze in a little bit of discussion about the Gomeshi verdict, which was today as well at the very end before we sign off. But first, this was the big non-terrorism-related story of the week. The federal budget was released on Tuesday, which, as Scott inferred, which was like a very, very busy news day indeed. As predicted, there are large deficits, larger than promised back in the campaign, but there's also significant new spending in many sectors. The one thing I liked about it, though, Scotty, was the thing people didn't. And Lloyd Longfield used the word when I talked to him, and there's a post on Politico right now. I talked to him about how the budget might affect Guelph. I posted it this morning in case you hadn't had a chance to check it out. But he used this word, pessimism. The economic forecast in it is pessimistic. There's no balancing the budget in year 4. The deficits will continue through to 2020 and 21, that fiscal year. They're really laying down an expectation that things might not get better as soon as we'd hoped, or in time for the next election, which was like the Harper government's foibles. And I like this approach better. I like this idea that, you know, we can't fix things within the span of two election cycles, which always bothered me about the Harper government. Like we talked about it last year when they passed the budget, when they borrowed just enough from the contingency fund to forecast a $600 million surplus. It's like, yeah, we balanced the budget and have a surplus. And it's like, yeah, but you borrowed $2 billion. But that's what I liked about this. It was pessimistic.
Yeah, and when you first said that, I thought the pessimism was supposed to be the previous government was pessimistic. But, you'd hope balance is a good word, because we've gone from this balance at all costs to this is kind of off the charts in terms of red ink. And I don't want to sound like a conservative by any means, but they did say,
it's not off the charts because there are 55 billion deficits in 2009.
The initial number was, they campaigned on 10 billion, and I think people there, if they had campaigned on 30 billion, they probably wouldn't have done as well, I think, generally. No. Just because, 29.4.
Yeah.
Psychologically, it's not $30 billion, it's $29.4 billion. But yeah, there's a bit of praying going on behind closed doors that, oh my God, we hope the economy will improve or we're finished. It was one of the interesting comments I saw was from Kevin Page, the former parliamentary budget officer, said that this was, and I don't think he's pro or con any of the governments. He's supposed to be the neutral voice, I suppose. And of course, the conservatives didn't like him. He said this is a budget without a fiscal plan. Mm. So, the plan is that we're going to spend this, and it's great. Lots of people are happy. You spread money around, people are happy, right? Not everyone, of course. You can't please everyone. Mm. But lots of the key sort of targeted groups or things that they had said in the in campaigning. One of which, I love this, old age security coming back to 65. My retirement's moved up again, so old man Hertz is going to retire sooner probably, because that's almost a no-brainer and probably wouldn't make that much of a fiscal difference to do that, because that's the way it was for a very, very long time. But, you know, money for the arts, money for the students, money for our indigenous people. They hit all the right notes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There was one missing that I was kind of keeping an eye on, was the money missing for home care. They had promised $3 billion, I think, in the election, and that just wasn't on the radar. Maybe it will be in the future. I don't know. That's not to say that they didn't sort of help out seniors in terms of in other ways. But yeah, there is really something in here for everybody. Mm-hmm. And today is not exactly sunny ways day, but ice storm day. What is that in literature, pathetic fallacy, where like the ice comes and when it means something bigger. It's so everybody's getting a little bit of something. But of course, what was the title? Growing the Middle Class. I think the middle class, which seems to be the target, is a couple with a couple of kids. They're all happy. And there was a bit of analysis in the Star there, sort of breaking it down. They do this all the time. They choose people and say, well, how has your life changed? It seemed that the low-income senior was a person that had no change and everybody else was getting a few bucks more. And it looked to me that the wealthiest couple that they spoke to actually ended up doing the best.
Yeah.
But I guess it depends where you draw that middle class line. I never, you know, that line tends to move around. I think if it's an accounting thing as opposed to who is actually middle class. I don't know. I'm not even sure if I am. I don't think so.
Yeah, middle class is one of those kind of buzzwords, I think, that has lost all
kind of like millennials, like last week. Like millennials.
I wouldn't even
where
say
do we draw that line?
I wouldn't even say it's that bad, but you know, taxpayer is another one. Middle class is another one.
Innovation is another one.
Yeah,
innovation. Here's some money for innovation. Here's some billions. Okay.
Yeah, the fiscal, I mean, I think so many thoughts in my head right now, but one of the primary ones is, I think, that I think we make a lot of ballyhoo about balanced budgets. I'm not sure when it came about where a balanced budget was the be-all, end-all of, in terms of measurement of government success. Like, we have a situation right now where growth is absolutely stagnant. Every urban community in this country from coast to coast to coast has huge infrastructure backlogs. You can give your tax cuts and your tax breaks to like middle class people and parents and students and like that. None of that affects me. But you know what? Having more money to buy buses to make a more efficient transit in this city, that affects me.
Mm-hmm.
Having proper pipes to bring clean water to my tap, that affects me. This is important stuff. And I'm not sure if this is 100% true or not. I'll take his word for it. But Lloyd Longfield said to me that they were given a parliamentary library report that said that $18 billion of the deficit is $18 billion of the 29.4 is all loss of revenue from the oil patch.
Well,
sounds a little convenient because that means $11 billion is new spending. So, which kind of keeps in line with election promises. So, I mean, that sounds a little bit convenient, but I have no reason to expect that's wrong. I mean, that did come apart rather quickly last fall, the sinking oil prices. I don't think there's anything in here to get too mad about. It's funny watching Rona Ambrose come out and go, it's a nightmare scenario for taxpayers. That's my terrible Rona Ambrose impression.
But it's difficult.
You're forced to pick up the tab for generations, waste and mismanagement. And I'm like, well, you don't know it's waste and mismanagement yet.
Yes, it just came out that's today. Exactly it.
And then, does she not remember last year when Joe Oliver said that Stephen Harper's grandchildren will pick up the tab for some stuff?
And a little bit off the cuff there.
Yeah.
And you can see why they didn't want people to speak off the cuff, because that's what you get.
And then Tom Mulcair.
The truth.
And Tom Mulcair comes out and is like, didn't raise corporate taxes. My Tom Mulcair impression exactly.
Everybody ranting says the same. You know something? It's all bad.
It's like, no lower threshold for unemployment. It's like, you know, he kind of came out a little bit weak tea. So, I mean, everybody from both sides was pissed off, which seems to me to say this may not be such a bad budget.
Yeah.
Everybody from both sides of the spectrum is kind of a little ticked off. But, I mean, the indigenous community stuff, that extra money for indigenous people, giving money so we can get off boiled water advisories that have been going on for decades. And then on top of it all this week, we have that Keshechewan situation.
Again.
Mysterious illness.
Yes.
That
the scabby kids in Batego.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, and that's all third world, if I can call it that.
It is third world.
Yep.
If you look at some of those, the film from Keshechewan, it's...
Because what's changed? The housing conditions are the same. Conditions are the same. There's been no improvements, really.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can point to and say that that community's improved. And hopefully, rather than this money going to, you know, some bureaucratic whatever that will create innovation to come up with solutions for First Nations and Indigenous people, they'll get up there and fix it, right?
Yeah.
This time, right? They've promised. They've got Indigenous people on side. And here we have this. What was the total? Was it $8 billion total? I've just got so many numbers.
$8.4 billion.
Nothing to sneeze at, right? That should really, really help. And if we're sitting here in a couple of years talking about Saskatchewan again,
oh yeah,
I'm going to be more pissed off than probably I've ever been. Because
well,
you
and Perry Belgrade probably, because
yeah,
Justin Trudeau's been kind of building this up as like a major plank. And if it does come like a couple of years and billions of dollars later, there's still no progress.
Inexcusable,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I know we've seen money for green initiatives as well, as Denny Coderre called it, a new deal for the climate and all that. I don't know if that was just a language thing or whatever, but and all that includes quite a bit, as you said, for buses and, again, the magic word innovation. Was it something for electric cars? And have you got the exact numbers there? I'm just sort of freewheeling here, but $2 billion for
numbers.
Clean tech, was it? Electric vehicles? And what was that line in
there? $1 billion for over 4 years for things environmental. Electric vehicles and alternative fuel vehicles will get $62.5 million over 2 years for new charging and refueling stations. And there will be tax incentives to build electric car charging stations. And another $20 million over 8 years to go to research for clean, sustainable energy tech.
What was that line? And was it Team America that in the future everyone will drive an electric car? So that's what they're
that's
what we're heading for. Well, there's a charging station out front of the university here, but I've never ever seen a car parked in front of it. That's not to say that there shouldn't be, but
or
of course
there isn't. I mean,
no, but you know, until we get affordable ones, you know,
until
an electric. And I'm hoping that's where this money's going to go, where you know, an electric car that the schmoes can drive, because it isn't going to happen.
Well, as Oliver Rockside always says, like, it's not going to take off until you have a battery that can last as long as a tank of gas and a fuel-efficient car can do you.
Yeah. But it depends on your lifestyle, too, though, right? If you're just going to have an electric car to punt around town, it'll run forever, probably. Not okay. It doesn't run forever, but you know, you don't need full tanks necessarily when you're going 5 kilometers. Right,
but until electric charging station, until you go up to like the Petro and there's the lead, unleaded, diesel,
and juice.
And electric.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably not going to get there. And one more thing before
our green heads explode. No,
but the culture spending, I think you mentioned that, $675 million for the CBC and Radio Canada, $22 million for Telefilm, $550 million for the Council of the Arts, $13.5 million for the NFB, who was gutted.
I love the NFB so much.
Yeah.
It's like one of my I would say in my world, NFB supersedes CBC. Nothing against CBC, but I'm sure the money going to the CBC just made every single conservative's head explode, for sure, especially Rona and company, because they have a pathological hatred for it. I guess because it doesn't sway their
and
way.
And from this week's Canada Land, or the Thursday one anyway, somebody is on there, I can't remember his name, Stephen Marsh, I think, was talking about CBC and the last time he was in CBC studios, and it's like they're running on fumes in there. They're just running on fumes. There's like no money for water coolers even.
Yeah, that's not surprising. You'd think water coolers would be up there, but...
It would be, easy, to have water coolers, but no. And he said there was a retirement party they had for somebody, or like a goodbye party for somebody, and it was like a bring-your-own-tea-bag party.
What do you mean there's no cake?
It's cake. They didn't even have tea. They didn't even have, like, you know...
Rex Murphy would get a cake.
Oh, I'd like to put a cake
in Rex Murphy's face. Yeah, they should let him go and free up some money for some, you know... peons to do some real work. Oh, that was a bit of a shot there. Sorry. Sorry there, Rex. Yeah, that's Rex. I'm usually asleep at that point now. But yeah, so money, sunny money, sunny ways, money everywhere.
And for veterans too.
Veterans?
All the veterans offices that were closed are going to mm-hmm. be reopened. $5.6 billion more for disability awards for injured veterans and to enhance the financial benefits package that they receive. And I think on top of that, they've already announced that they're bringing back the option to get one-time payment or lifetime coverage for veterans too.
So pretty much everything we saw trashed in the past 10 years is back with a vengeance. And also, and speaking of environment as well, Experimental Lakes back on.
Yes.
Which is, to me, that's fantastic.
Which was saved by the Ontario government.
Yes.
And then
so they're in cahoots. They're definitely working in cahoots.
And then the tax credits, the fitness tax credit, arts tax credit, income splitting for couples with children, all gone. And yeah,
get your tax credits before they're gone. Yep.
Well, so gone now.
They're gone, or all rolled into one or something. The child tax credit, funny enough, that will be rolled out on July 1st. What if there's a coincidence there?
Well,
didn't they take seven or eight things and synthesize them into one thing? Like, just you got a kid, this is what you get.
That's yeah. They did that with the child care tax. There was like three
efficiency.
Different programs.
Yeah,
yeah. But the thing with July 1st. I mean, yeah, it's Canada Day, but I think it's also the beginning of a next quarter.
Ah, right.
They can't do it in time for the coming quarter, which I think starts in April 1st. So they have.
So
to
it's
do
actually an economics thing as opposed to.
I mean, it's good optics.
Symbolic. Oh, yeah.
But, I mean,
there's going to be no one to process it because it's a holiday. So, yeah. The check ain't going to clear.
I think you get it in your account the day before, I think.
So, watch your accounts, people. Because the money's coming. It's raining money.
Well, it's not raining money in
icy
the Senate
money.
Anymore.
No.
And they had an independent auditor, former Supreme Court Justice Ian Binney. Who, you might remember, there were 30 senators who were highlighted, current and former senators, for getting a bit too spendy with their expense accounts. Out of that came the cold cannon bear comments and all that. You guys will probably remember that. There are 14 senators who wanted their expenses re-audited. They wanted to cross the I's and dot the T's and see exactly how much they owe. The original bill was something to the tune of $323,000. That was knocked down to about half. So in all, they owe these 14 senators $177,898. $177,898 there. Third time's a charm.
We need that cash sound from the election. The cha-ching.
We do need the cha-ching sound effect. Cha-ching. We need to go full zoo crew. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so some of the amounts range from like a simple $1,000 to as high as $25,000. One of the most indignant, I think, was this guy, Nick Sibersath, who billed almost $27,000 for various trips, one of which was $1,471 to go see his son's ice sculpture competition in Quebec City, which just automatically doesn't sound like Senate business.
It's very Canadian, but no, it's...
My son's carving ice.
Yeah, who's
it? Let me expense it.
My favorite was Stratton, Terry Stratton, trying to claim that trip he was going to sort out the romantic tiff between a conservative staffer and his girlfriend. That got claimed. And
who is he, Oprah?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, the mediator or something. And of course, Colin Kenny, who's got his own set of issues, but he put out a press release to say that he didn't have any comment on the matter. But he
there were a lot of no.
He
comments.
Owes like $27,000. Yeah, but why would you put out a press release and say no comment? You say no comment when you're walking by the microphones, right?
Well, so they don't start calling you for.
But one of his, according to Heather Malik in the Star, was flying somewhere for lipo laser appointments, and I don't even know what that is, and I wasn't even going to Google it. But lipo lasers doesn't sound like Senate business to me somehow. So she called it, they're living in their alternate fattened galaxy, and that sums it up completely.
Yeah, for sure. It's
the fattened galaxy. I mean, you can picture that sort of
the
orbiting
galaxy.
Around with our friend Duffy and
ooh, fat joke on Duffy.
No. Okay, Pamela Wallen, there you go. Chancellorella.
It's worth knowing.
Is the female of Chancellorella? No, it's Chancellor. Sorry.
It's worth noting that these expenses don't count the ones from Harb, Duffy, Wallen, and Brazeau. They're kind of on their own separate in trouble.
Hear that, conservatives? We said Mac Harb, okay? Mac Harb. Yeah, but it's across the board.
And
here,
Nick,
right?
Seberstin is a liberal, too.
Yeah, it's across the board, except for the NDP.
Although, or independent liberal or whatever.
Yeah, whatever they are now, I don't know. Well, so whether some of them, what will it get paid back? That is the burning question, right? But
well, the other burning question is Justice Binney said, she said there was no bad motives to any of the senators, impugned that there were no bad motives amongst any of the senators
because of the lack of rules. So you can't really actually prove that they would, you know, you
yeah,
can
but
claim your lipo laser treatments.
Well, first
right?
of all, there's the what question the effect is this might have on the ruling of Duffy, which I think comes out in a couple of weeks, if I remember correctly. I think it's the 22nd it comes out.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what effect that's going to have? Because if Binney's saying that, yeah, these people have no, like, criminal culpability, what does that say about Duffy, who is on trial for criminal culpability with some of these same expenses? The other question is, though, yes, by law or, you know, by rule, you know, perhaps they weren't culpable, but what happened to, like, just common sense rules, like things that make sense to you, right? Like, do you hand in an expense for like every coffee you drink, even if it happens to be with somebody tangentially attached to Parliament Hill? Or, you know, that's a bit iffy. On the other hand, flying to Quebec City to watch your son's ice sculpting competition?
Yeah, but this is a case of the whole give an inch and take not just a mile, but like the whole 5,000 miles of this nation or whatever, right? Because if you're allowed to do it, you will do it. And I would I would honestly say, if you're on the job and you're having a sandwich, or you need a sandwich or some cold camembert, by all means, expense it, right? Just because. You know, you would hope that for everybody. And I know people argue and say, well, I can't expense that. I think you should. I think if that's your arrangement and you're on bona fide business to do with what you're doing, then by all means. But yeah, it's like you say, common sense.
Yeah.
But if there is no set of rules, and that's what seems to have been the problem, that there's no sheet of paper somewhere that says, okay, if you're on the job for 8 hours, it's X. If you're on the job for 12 hours, it's Y.
Right.
If it's all day and it's going to be an all-nighter, yes, you can get a hotel room or a flight somewhere. But that's the problem, where the crossover between the personal and the public. There, it's not even a fine line. There is no line, right? So until that is defined, until they all sit down, whoever it's going to be, the new senators, the old senators, whatever, whoever sits down, or even Trudeau and co., and say, here is a set of rules, you need to follow them, and if you don't, there'll be this, and this will happen. Because binding this arbitration, this isn't court. He was a Supreme Court justice,
yeah.
Right? But this isn't court.
No.
Binding arbitration is just, it's like, this is a really good idea. It's not, you know, as far as I can tell, they're not legally bound to pay back.
No.
You would hope so, because, you know, the optics are really bad. And, of course, there's the people that didn't opt for it but have left, right? Like Sharon Carstairs won. Zimmer, what was Zimmer? It was like $176,000. It was big.
Yeah.
Well, he's just gone, right? So what are they going to do?
Yeah.
That's your golden handshake. Now get lost, right?
Pretty much. And, you know,
Mac Harb left, and they were like, okay, whatever.
Well, and that's kind of why he's like kind of forgotten. And
I said it again. Take a drink. I'm just going to keep saying his name if you're playing the drinking game.
On the other hand, we do have new senators coming in, the first seven to be named by the Trudeau government. They're nominated. I think it's up to the Governor General to actually appoint, but the way it works is they bring the names forward. The Governor General gives his a rubber stamp. So you have they actually continued on the gender equality, because it's four women and three men.
Huh.
You have Raymond Gagné, who was the president of the University of Saint president of the University of Saint Boniface. You have Murray St. Clair, of course, very famous for Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Good choice.
V. Peter Harder, who was a deputy minister for several different ministries. You have Frances Larkin, and she was a former MPP, former NDP MPP.
Yeah, so now they can't say, we don't have any senators. Yeah, you got one now, guys.
CEO, former CEO of the United Way. You have Ratina Amidvar. She was a professor at Ryerson, Chantal Petitclerc. Thank you. She was a former Olympian, and then Andre Pratt, former, or I think he is still actually maybe current editor in chief of La Presse. So. Not a bad group of folks.
Quite the mix.
Yeah. Interesting
mix. And I think we saw this coming in terms of what they were going to do. The picks are kind of inspired. I don't know much about Chantal Petitclerc. I know she's Order of Canada and done a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
But they always seem to throw in an athlete, though. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that. Because it was that Peter Mihovlich is a senator, I don't know if he's retired yet, the hockey player.
A lot of athletes go on to do a lot of
Ken Dryden
work and
Ken Dryden, there
philanthropic
you go.
Work. So,
not to diss the athletes at all, but interesting choice and also an advocate for accessibility. Everybody's got a thing, as we know, Murray Sinclair for sure. And like I said before, Frances Lincoln. So the NDP now are up one. They'll somehow manage to disown her. But she was. I remember she was in the Ray government, right? And union activist. I think she may be part of that. You know, the more pinko types of the NDP that we used to know.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, I think sometimes the Ray government disavowed because he went on to be a federal liberal. And
yes.
So it seems like...
A lot of back and forth there.
Yeah.
But Peter Harder, he's been, you know, there was a little bit of grumbling that, well, you know, that was a partisan appointment. But he sounds top drawer in terms of a civil servant and the things he knows. I think he's been in the business for a long time.
30 years, yeah.
Yep, and that's the person that you need. To sort it out, because as we've said with the prior, what we were talking about, the Senate needs a lot of sorting out if it is to stay. They need to prove themselves to this country, and I got a feeling that we're not going to shake it loose anytime soon. So if this is the best we're going to get, those are some pretty good picks, and I hope that they, you know, hit the ground running. And
yeah. You do have senators. I mean, there was a thing before the show. They're pushing in the Senate to try and get independent senators to committee chair positions. And, of course, because so many people were kicked out of caucus, and then Trudeau kicked all the Liberal senators out of caucus.
So what are they calling these guys?
I don't know if they're calling just independent
they're
senators.
They're just senators.
Yeah.
There's no affiliation.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess so.
But, I mean, it's... It's, you know, there is change in the air, at least. And it seems like some people in the House side and in the Senate side are recognizing that there needs to be change, especially since it doesn't seem feasible that the Senate is going to be disbanded anytime soon,
which is a damn shame. But anyway.
Well, yeah, it's I will hold to my feeling that an apolitical body or a body that should be apolitical and can do good work, but without having to worry about standing for election every 4 years. Having said that, you're right. The Senate is going to have to prove itself. It's going to have to prove itself in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope naming people who have like really great CVs and aren't just being named because they did a good job campaigning in the last election or took down the Liberal leader a couple of days before the election. Duffy! As a partisan reward, then it's the beginning of something, again, because the Senate isn't going to go away anytime soon. So we'll keep our eye on that, and we'll keep our eye on the budget stuff as that rolls out. Trudeau was on the campaign trail today already, the budget campaign trail.
Hmm. What if he's coming by? I did. I hailed him.
You held Trudeau?
I hailed him.
Oh.
I sent him a heads up saying, hey, Justin, give us a call when you get a chance. You think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding.
Anyway, we're going to go to a commercial break and do some PSAs and some music, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Like a breath of fresh air.
there you have it. One of my favorites from back in the day. That'd be from 1990. Tribe Called Quest's first album, People's Instinctive Travels and the Paths of Rhythm. Fife Dog has left us age 45 of kidney failure, I believe. So definitely, as I was saying earlier before we started, bad week for the 40-year-olds all around. There's been lots of surprising obituaries, and that Fife Dog was 19 when they did that album. All of Tribe Called Quest were very young, and were definitely kicking it on that front, and had definitely a game changer back in the day.
Kicking the bucket too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, geez. Yes.
Powerful metaphor there.
Yep.
Okay. Speaking of powerful metaphors, Donald Trump. Oh God, I got the whole thing confused. But Donald Trump, of course, is heavily influenced, some people say, by the success of Rob Ford, who, of course, passed away at the age of 46. It was not looking good. Over the weekend, he went into palliative care, which, if anyone has had a loved one very seriously ill, is probably not a phrase and a destination you want to hear about. And then he passed away Tuesday morning.
Yeah, when they usually in the media, when they say the family have been called in or there is a vigil, it's like, it's not good.
No.
You know right away.
It was reported last week that the chemotherapy had failed. This was the second round. He had two tumors. This is why he got out of the mayoral race in 2014. And then they discovered two more tumors just as he seemed to be on the mend. And it's very sad, of course. He leaves behind two very young children, a loving family by all appearances. But I have been fascinated by, and we kind of talk about this every time someone politically, shall we say, disagreeable passes away. I remember having this discussion on the old show when Jim Flaherty passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think I'd put Jim Flaherty in the same category as Rob Ford. But overall, the outpouring seems to say, like, a lot of people are going to miss Rob Ford, and there are a lot of great salutes to him as like the everyman. But peeling it back, I've been more fascinated with the people who refuse to go, no, we will speak not ill of the dead, but honestly of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And HuffPost did that. Somebody wrote a piece on HuffPost called Rob Ford Lived the Gimmick, and That Was the Problem. You had the Torontoist, who said that Rob Ford was loathed by a great many people and not out of pique. You had Andre Demise, who ran against Rob Ford in War II.
Great article.
Yeah, that was really great.
I think it's on TV Ontario. It's one of those specials that they run every once in a while.
Yes, it was a piece on the TVO website anyway,
mm-hmm.
Talking about how Rob Ford phrased himself as someone who fights for the little guy.
But wasn't really.
But there was it related a story of talking to this one woman who he did not get. Who was not christened into Ford Nation, let's say. And then Megan Murphy on Rabble, in a piece she wrote called On the Death of Rob Ford and Mourning Abuse of Men. You're talking about how he was a millionaire with a working class attitude and how he hated the poor and the numerous instances of being accused of domestic abuse in his own household. The number of times the police were called to the stately Ford Manor. And it's sort of fascinating to watch these two narratives unfold.
Mm-hmm. Frank Magazine did a cartoon sort of parodying in the dark way that they do of the Kennedy assassination using actual quotes from Rob Ford. And Doug, actually, and his wife, Renata, relating directly to the problematic side of Ford, which is what he's known for. He wasn't really known for being a good mayor. Of course, he did return people's phone calls, but why? What did the notoriety come from? He's going to be remembered as the crack mayor. Yeah. I think one of the best descriptions that I saw was rumpled populist. Sort of sums it up, because they're always looking for a soundbitey thing to say. Kind of like drunken stupors, as to how they can sum the guy up in a tidy thing. But there was nothing tidy about Rob Ford. He was a train wreck. He was an absolute train wreck. And it looked like he was going to get his stuff together when he was taken off of city council and went to rehab.
Right.
But this was the problem with Rob Ford, was that up until the last minute, and this was before he was sick, he refused to admit that there was a problem. And that's huge in terms of addictive behavior. But, and all that stuff about speaking ill of the dead, it doesn't really apply here, I don't think, because there's a lot. The only way we spoke of Rob Ford in the past was because of this problematic behavior. But I think then there's obviously a ton of videos. He should be called the YouTube mayor, actually. The one to me that sums up his whole appeal to the little guy, which seems to be getting a lot of traction in terms of who he supported, is the video where he's at that late night diner speaking in Jamaican patois. To me, that in 1 minute sums up what his appeal was to people, because that's very street. We had our own place like that in Etobicoke. It was in South Etobicoke. Theirs was in the north. Ours was run by Greek people. You would go there after drinking, and that's where you just hung out. And that's what Rob Ford did there. And you'll note if you watch it that the guy, I don't know if it's the one filming it, was saying, yeah, you should be prime minister, man. But of course, we know what Rob Ford thought of who became the current prime minister, called him, quote, a fag. Mm. So that's when you get to the base level, Rob Ford, that's what Rob Ford was about. It's what was the quote about when you wake up one day and the people that you disliked and disliked you in high school end up running the place?
Yeah.
Ford applies, Gomeshi applies from the art department, I guess. That's it. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about him later. But that's the problem with Rob Ford. Is this really difficult to say something nice about a guy that was, possibly an abuser, didn't like women, made disparaging remarks, talking about, and you can't excuse it for saying, well, he was drunk or he was on crack. He's the mayor of Toronto, right?
Yeah. I mean, the problem with Rob Ford, so far as I see it, and just in terms of the politics, I'll get into the personal in a sec, but the politics of it, yeah, he was really good at answering people's phone calls and handling the little problems, being what Jon Stewart called Toronto super. You had a problem, you went to Rob Ford, kitten in a tree problems, great. He was your man, and you can't begrudge him for it. He built a following from that, and understandably so. But when you become the mayor of the fourth largest city in the country, you have to pick up and read a policy binder every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
When you're the mayor of Toronto, you can't get up on the witness stand at a trial and say, well, I didn't read the conflict of interest code or the city council handbook, especially after being on city council for 12 years. You didn't at some point – you weren't at some point bored enough to pick up the frickin' owner's manual of the local government? Come on.
I don't have to.
Basically, the personal side of it is there's something analogous between what happened to Rob Ford and what happened to Michael Jackson, and I'm curious to see what will happen in the years to come.
Interesting comparison, yeah.
But Michael Jackson was someone who had deep-seated personal problems that were overlooked by his family so that he could be their cash cow. And, I mean, the Fords weren't making money off of Rob, obviously, but they were making a dynasty of themselves. I reread Crazy Town recently.
Good book.
It is a good book, and this had nothing to do with it. It was just sort of sitting on there on my bookshelf, and I was staring at it and thinking, yeah, I'll reread it. And that was the big thing of it. When he ran for mayor, and a lot of the meetings that Nick Corvallatis and Mark Toohey had, it was with Doug because it was seen as his running for mayor as a family effort. Mm-hmm. It was the family was running for mayor, essentially, with Rob as the figurehead. At least that's the way Doug Ford seemed to see it. And it's the same thing with the Jacksons. Michael Jackson was the Jackson family, and you see that now with – like Tito still wears the memorial jacket they had made and embroidered after Michael's death. He still wears that 6 years after the fact. You see him out wearing it, and it's almost complete Italian widow syndrome. And I'll be interested to see if Doug and the other Fords can carry on like that, and he becomes this sort of memorialized figure of the greatness of Ford Nation.
That's a very astute comparison. I can see that too. And also that with the comparison to Trump, because again, rich guy, shoots from the hip, appeals to the little guy. And I keep doing air quotes, but that's
that no one can see on their radio.
No one can see their air quotes. Oh my God! We need an air quote button or something. As we go,
yeah,
air quote. But he came around at that time where was it Goolsbee called him the avatar of resentment?
Yeah,
and that's exactly what we're getting with Trump. It's like people are pissed off, and they want somebody to come and just make it all better. So Rob Ford did that, and you were speaking about Doug and the dynasty. I mean, when Doug stepped in when Rob got sick, he came in second. That's, lots of votes. Right?
That's kind of the disappointing thing. I mean, it's so much you're going to be disappointed about someone who died. But when Rob stepped down, and I think we did talk about this on the old show, when he stepped down before the municipal election in 2014 and ran for his council seat instead when the cancer forced him to step down.
Mm-hmm.
My comment was, unfortunately, the people of Toronto won't be able to refute Ford Nation at the only place that matters, which is the ballot box.
Mm-hmm.
And that will never happen now. I mean, he was talking about getting back, getting healthy, being ready for 2018. It's kind of left this like sort of dangling modifier that mm-hmm. this remainder that can never be divided away, that, you know, even though Doug ran, Rob was still the symbol for that movement. Yep. It wasn't the Ford Nation meaning Doug. It was Ford Nation meaning Rob.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people find Doug Ford, even people who admire the Ford family, disagreeable in a personal way and an approachable way versus to what Rob was. But for Toronto, this sort of divide can never be fully reconciled because no one will be able to go to a ballot box and not vote for Rob Ford as a majority. And that's going to be somewhat tricky to rectify in the years to come.
Yeah, that's probably the most unfortunate thing about all of it. He looked in some ways that he was on some kind of redemption path,
yeah,
which is the story that people love. If you can get your crap together, yeah. Robert Downey Jr.
People love a second act.
Whatever, right? Yeah. You know, you've been to jail, you did this and that, you did a bunch of drugs, and then you're back. So folk love that. And that may be the unfortunate thing where we're never able to see it. Like, did he actually redeem himself? Did he really sort of get his act together? And I probably feel most sorry for the kids.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Out of everybody.
Yeah. Rob, unfortunately, will never get his kiss, kiss, bang, bang moment. Not to wrap up, because we got a couple more things to talk about, but Barack Obama was in Cuba. He traveled there as part of the ongoing effort to sort of normalize relations between the United States and Cuba because the economic embargo that started during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962 is still going on 54 years later. But at least there seems to be some sort of a thaw in progress. Barack Obama went down, had some talks with Raul Castro, who is in charge. Fidel isn't.
There's another dynasty of brothers.
That's true.
Yeah.
Fidel isn't seen much anymore. Interestingly, and I didn't know this, but Raul was the older brother.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought he was the younger brother for some reason. I guess because he's in charge.
Health wise, he's in better shape too.
Yeah. I mean, I see this as good.
Oh yeah.
Let's finally end the Cold War, because it does seem like this is kind of like the last front of the Cold War, even though the Russians still act like dicks. You know, we're still going to punish Cuba for the Cuban Missile Crisis all these years later. I don't know. I like it. I like seeing the American president in Cuba for the first time in 90 years.
Yeah, who was it? Coolidge or something?
Yeah, Coolidge.
Down on a battleship. And then I'm actually surprised that there weren't others had gone there before the revolution in 59.
Yeah.
But I guess it was just like, well, we didn't get around to it. And of course, there was a
depression,
you know, World War II in there. Yeah. So there's a lot of history. But pretty amazing considering the history of all this that it has come to this. And that this will be a key plank or whatever in Obama's legacy. It will, for sure. Let me just point to it and say, you know, he was able to get the veil to lift on Cuba. Not completely, though, because I think it was Raul Castro himself said there's obviously profound differences. And him getting testy at that press conference is like, you name those political prisoners and we'll let them go. Meanwhile, like before they even connected there, they were arresting the ladies in white who are they advocate for political – it's the wives essentially of political prisoners get rounded up, whether they were held or whatever. No one seems to know, and this is one of the key problems. But then, of course, Castro just points to Guantanamo Bay. He's like, well, there you go. So it's not as if this is a clean sort of we're starting over. It's incremental, and we're going to see that. And of course, baseball. I mean, the ultimate sort of Cuban American merger is a baseball game. Yeah. And Obama got a little bit of criticism there for going to the game after the attacks in Brussels. But you know, there is what do you do? There is no ISIS in Cuba that we know of. And it's the kind of thing where...
Can you imagine if there was ISIS in Cuba?
No. I can't. Well, because they're not. They would be rounded up with the other people. So, and hopefully we will never see ISIS in Cuba. But yeah, so I think the whole idea of trying to go on business as usual is like, yeah, Raul and I are hanging out at the baseball game. And I think both sides are pretty adamant that there was to be no meeting with Fidel. Other world leaders, Francois Hollande, I believe, socialist in name, and Venezuelan president had met, and of course the Pope. Mm-hmm. The Pope had met with Fidel, and they had a good chat. But I think
if he's still alive,
He's an android like Brezhnev.
If it's not weakened,
there's
Bernie's
Cold War
down there.
For you. But yeah, to think this is the big thaw of the Cold War, because it summed up so much of at least 60s America for sure. Beyond Vietnam was like the conflict with Cuba, and there was a point there whether they figured it was going to be global conflict with the Cuban Missile Crisis. And left a lot of bad blood for obviously more than 50 years. But now it's, you know, the companies are coming back. Carnival Cruise easing in and Western Union. So there'll be people.
Starwood.
Yes, the hotels. So people can transfer money back and forth from Florida. So it is opening up. And just Obama's comments about, you know, y'all need the internet. It's just like 5% of Cubans or something have the internet. They all have TVs because it seems every single channel was Obama's speech.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting because Castro didn't normally do pressers, like press conferences. And so that's a bit of a change as well. And whoever's next will obviously have to step it up and keep the ball rolling, so to speak.
Well, and that's going to be the tricky part if certain people get elected, because, of course, you know, both Cruz and Trump were on the high horse.
The wall, never mind the wall.
Yeah. But, I mean, the thing that pleases me is that the New York Times did a poll. 62% of Americans say reopening ties to Cuba would almost certainly be good for the United States. Even though 40% of them say it will not open up Cuba to further democratic reform. But, I mean, I understand that pessimism, to bring us full circle to the top of the hour. But, you know, Cuba wasn't going to open up, still being walled off from the world under economic embargo, driving around in their 1959 cars, right?
That wasn't going to happen. Which is a tourist attraction.
Well, and that's
so
true.
So keep them going.
And 55% of Americans approve the job Obama's doing handling Cuba. So, I mean, I think there was a lot of trepidation about opening this up because – and I think by and large because it was a political hot potato for so long because of the Cuban community in Florida.
Yes.
But young Cubans, people who don't remember the Cuban Missile Crisis –
being on a boat trying to escape. Yeah.
Yeah, people who don't remember –
or were kicked out.
Right. People who don't remember –
for being gay.
Cuban Missile Crisis from 13 Days, the movie, the Kevin Costner movie.
Oh, yeah.
Those people are saying, yeah, it's time. Let's, you know, open that place. Let's open up relations with Cuba. Let's start trading. Let's start, you know, visiting. It's a communist country ruled by a dictator. But, you know, why are we kind of ruling them out? It seems kind of petty.
Now, if he can later jam in North Korea before the mandate's out, then it'll definitely be a...
Well,
a coup.
North Korea is another bailiwick altogether.
No, but still it's, Cold War holdover, though, right?
Yeah, I know. It's still...
I think they might even be off the map in terms of Cold War. It's like another planet, really.
Yeah.
So, no hopey changey there for a while yet, but we'll see.
North Korea... Well, not with Little Kim in charge.
Little Kim. rap on the side, yeah.
It did bother me, though, people saying, like, The Guardian wrote that there was a dire international crisis going on. Obama was at a baseball game. And it's like, what dire international? It was, Brussels. I mean, yeah, it was bad stuff happening in Brussels. But
I like The Guardian, but there are times.
Ted Cruz said he should be going to Brussels right away. Why? Is Barack Obama Colombo? Is he going to track down the freaking terrorists?
Or get taken out?
Yeah, like,
you're going to go rushing into the zone?
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to throw that in there, too.
I'm sure Brussels are all right with him staying where he was.
I think so, too. Before we sign off, this kind of was late breaking. I forgot that this verdict was supposed to come down today. But, I mean, given the news week it was,
jeez,
unsurprising. Yeah. But
In hour two, we're going to talk about... No.
Don't give anyone around here any ideas.
No. It might happen, yeah.
So, yeah, Chiang Kimbeshi was found not guilty on all counts. I think it was 4 counts, assault and 1 count of choking. And it was perhaps not unsurprising given the case, given the sheer length of time between when the complainants were assaulted and when this finally came to court. But I wanted to draw attention to something particularly disturbing that the judge said in his decision, Justice William Horkins. He said, each complainant was confronted with a volume of evidence that was contrary to their prior sworn statements and their evidence in chief. I think that's a legal term. Each complainant demonstrated to some degree a willingness to ignore their oath to tell the truth on more than one occasion. It is this aspect of their evidence that is most troubling to the court. Basically, he's saying the fact they couldn't remember in exact detail years later is not good. It probably means they're lying about it. I mean, that's kind of reading between the lines, but I think Horkins probably set back the movement on this issue by several years by basically saying, you know what, women, you're going to have to come in here with like the CSI report if we're going to believe you in court.
And this is all fresh to me. I had one of those afternoons where I didn't really stay in tune. I did hear that the verdict had come down and that protesters had been arrested, among other things. But yeah, not exactly. There didn't seem to be any tact in that at all. It's just kind of laying it out. And in terms of setting it back, you know, as all I heard on the radio was in passing, I heard Christy Blatchford, which is... she's been covering the case, and in terms of the dialogue, she might be one of the worst in terms of like, well, you know, you're innocent till proven guilty and all that. I got to tell you, I am one of these people that believes the women.
Yeah.
For sure. We've talked about Gomeshi in the past. I think he's a dirtbag in my view. he'll never work again. I don't know if there's some solace in that, but there's also, if I understood it right, and I heard briefly that he's got another trial coming up in June. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is it the same kind of thing?
I don't know what the charges are, but I know
it's a sexual assault trial, isn't it?
I believe so.
Hella coincidence that all of this is, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. He's never going to work again. I'd be very surprised if I hear he has like a job in the media or anywhere like media adjacent, even as like a consultant or something. That would be very surprising to me.
Yeah.
But
in the scheme of things, it's almost a minor point too, because this is, if not the big issue, like it is a big issue in terms of how culturally this is dealt with. You think this is something that went on in the past, say the Mad Men days in the office of CBC or whatever. And I'm sure CBC will have all kinds of analysis tonight as what went on, but they don't seem to be doing an analysis of their own culture. You'll never hear them talking about culturally what they could have done differently. I don't think so. I haven't heard that. I'm waiting to hear that in terms of how is that going to change? Because, if, you know, this CBC belongs to the people. And we're now throwing another bunch of money at it, right, to keep it going because we all like it. This town is very pro-CBC. But until that kind of culture changes, will we see another Gomeshi? I mean, this isn't something that happened in the past. This isn't, you know, as what went on the BBC 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
This is recent stuff. And we hear about it over and over again. And it's not just Gomeshi. It's on campuses. It's everywhere. Cultural shift is what is required. And will we see that? Unfortunately, not in this case, but, you know, there is another trial in June, so we'll see.
We will see, and that is all for this week. Just a programming note, we will have Guelph MPP and Ministry of Education Liz Sandals on the show next week. And then in a couple of weeks, we'll have Mike Schreiner on for our Earth Day show on April 21st. In between, we're going to try and pack in Andy Van Hellemond, and we're going to see if we can get Guelph MP Lloyd Longfield in as well. So if you have questions for any of those people or want to know more about this, I will refer you to our website. Go to opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, and at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. Send us any questions or queries or comments that you want to share with any of our special guests and get updates on when the special guests are coming, all at those various locales. And of course, you can download Guelph Politicast is the channel that you will find the downloadable version of Open Sources Guelph every week on. You download it, listen to whatever you listen to find podcasts on. Find me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, and of course, GuelphPolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scott Hertz on Facebook and on Twitter, and you can find me here or wherever, but lots of channels to find us, so no excuse for not listening.
And keep it on this channel at the top of the hour for DJ Sam's Good to Me. She'll be on at 6 to spin some tunes here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And until next Thursday at 5 p.m., have a good week and enjoy your Easter weekend, folks.